Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Vasilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 260, being recorded on the 4th of January, 2019. I'm Sajid, and on the Teams with me, I have Kale and Russell. It's the podcast gang together today. Happy New Year to all of you. Hope you guys had a good holiday break. I know everybody's slowly getting back into work. We ourselves took a bit of a break, much needed, I'm sure. And good to be back, right?
Yep. Absolutely. First show for 2019, so it's awesome.
Yeah, nice. Happy New Year. Looks like, you know, we're back working, but there's not been a great deal of announcements coming out on the Azure side, has there, since last time?
They're still waking up a little bit, yeah. But we've got a few, right, Kale? You had some there?
Yeah, I dropped some of these in, and some of these are even back around Christmas time, but I didn't see that we had covered them, so just wanted to give a shout-out. I mean, one of the big ones was, you know, our friend Rob Caron with the Azure Source. If you go check out that blog post, they're always full of way more than you can get through in one setting. But lots of good stuff in there around, you know, transparent data encryption for SQL database. Talks a bit about some of the GA stuff that's just gone out for the virtual networking. And there's a massive list of other things, including like PowerShell modules and IoT stuff. And I can't cover it all here. I mean, there's so much going on there. But each one of those, if you drill through them, pick your poison there around the things that you're interested in. But it's been a pretty nice little wrap-up he has there of current things going live or beta or, you know, just in general about some of the products.
Yeah, I love how Rob keeps us all up to date. The one thing that I want to call out, though, from there, because this is an area that I'm very close to, is the virtual network support and the firewall support for Service Bus and Event Hubs is now GA. As you know, this is something that's very close to my customer, which is an insurance customer. And, you know, those kind of folks tend to be a little bit worried about exposing Azure services on the internet. As you know, by default, many Azure services are available on the internet. Yes, you can lock them down with some sort of, you know, RBAC policy or authentication required to access that service. But the service is still out there, you know, for hackers to kind of poke at and probe and whatnot. And over time, they've added this facility of the virtual network endpoints, which allows you to restrict access to a specific set of VNets. And then they've also added firewall support, which says only these IP addresses can access this particular service. But it hadn't been extended; those features hadn't made it to all services yet. And finally, they got around to making them GA for Event Hub and Service Bus, both of which we use quite heavily at my customer. So very, very happy to hear that that is now GA.
Yeah, it's great to have the option for that extra level of network security on top of authentication, like you mentioned. It's a really popular request, isn't it, for people, and especially when they're moving to IaaS, doing lift and shift from on-premise, and they know networking, they know how to secure everything with firewalls and stuff like that. Then they move to the cloud, and you're trying to get them to move on to PaaS and trying to get them to be serverless where possible, and mm-hmm. you don't really need virtual networks in that environment, but they're, you know, it's another leap of faith to go that far and to re-architect. So this fills that gap and gives them that extra level of security while enabling them to use the PaaS services in a hybrid IaaS environment as well. So, yeah, really popular, really great. Good to see.
The other thing is, I didn't even notice this, so I just looked at it, but under the Azure shows, you know, the Azure podcast is there with, I think it was Sajid from the KubeCon is in there. And then, but down a little further also is something I don't know that I've talked about on the podcast, but we've started a video podcast called Block Talk in Redmond around blockchain stuff. And so they're showing up now in Rob's feed. So you'll see We keep publishing those pretty much every 2 weeks, I think. We've been publishing those out, so all kinds of different tech around blockchain, very bite-sized things.
So you're going to be on video, Kale, in those talks?
Yeah. No, I mean, a bunch of videos up there. I mean, we have a lot of the team in there as well, the engineering team. So Mark McCurry and Ziad and Cody and all the usual suspects on the blockchain team.
That's a good one. Yeah.
And those are linked to from the Azure Source blog post, is that right?
Yeah, yeah. That's where I saw it. It was down in the Azure Shows section. They have like the IoT show and the Azure podcast. And then further down, they had Block Talk there. So I didn't even know that he was including them. So that's awesome.
Fantastic.
I know Evan's still on vacation until next week. But yeah, he was kind enough to put an item in here. I'll just quickly mention it. So, he's the SQL guy. So we'll cover him for this week. SQL Data Warehouse, now there is a way to integrate that with Informatica's PaaS service. So if you have SQL Data Warehouse, I guess if you want to exchange information with Informatica, that can be done directly from Azure itself. So you don't have to do anything custom for that. So that's we'll put a link to that in the show notes. There is one other item in here, but that is essentially the discussion that we're going to have today, right, Kale?
Yeah, so as mentioned to the team, one thing that seems like we hadn't give too much love to or talked a lot about was Azure Sphere. And so I was thinking this week, maybe we could take a little bit of time and just kind of walk through some of the basics, just to give people kind of a heads up or a high level around why they should care about this thing. It's kind of goes back, we were joking before we started the podcast that, we started the Azure podcast. The reason, a long, long time ago we started was there were so many services that were being created, and there still are, inside Azure. And keeping ahead of it to say, what is that thing and why should I care about it, was kind of the idea. And that's why I was just kind of thinking, from an Azure Sphere perspective, we hadn't really talked much about it.
Great idea. I'm glad you brought that up. So let's start. I mean, I'll ask the kind of obvious question, like at a very high level, what's the elevator pitch for Azure Sphere? What exactly is it? Okay.
Yeah, if you look at a lot of the stuff that we have out there around it, and like we said, we'll probably do some other drill downs on this, but from a high level, it basically encompasses three kind of principles that are driving this idea of smart and secured connected devices, primarily around the IoT space. So if you think about, just thinking about history a little bit to how we got to this point, in history, basically microcontrollers or things like your remote control or your toaster or any of these things that have a microchip in it, but aren't necessarily really quote unquote smart, like talking to the internet or interacting with other devices, were relatively secure before because essentially it was a physical thing, right? So like if someone physically hacked the device and did something that they shouldn't with it or whatever, it was very limited, like what they could do there in most cases because it wasn't connected to an outside world. And so they could basically manipulate it or do something with it maybe that wasn't intended, but it wasn't really like mass affecting half the internet or half the United States or something. But that changed, right? Because IoT has become pretty prevalent and widespread connectivity has gotten much better. And now we have this interconnected network of devices that are relatively simple, not, full devices like our laptops or phones or something, but something more simple that has a microcontroller on it. And the challenge you start running into there is how do you start bringing those legacy, that legacy forward into this like hyper-connected world? The problem is, as you can probably foresee, is security is a big one, right? Because if we start hard coding things or putting things that exist on die on a piece of silicone, then they're susceptible to attack. And if they're connected, the results could be pretty bad.
Yeah, Kale, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're probably referring to some of those webcam hacks and all that were popular a year or two ago, right?
That's some of it, but you would think that it's just going to get worse, right?
It's going to get worse from there, exactly. Yeah.
So I think the primary, just to close off on a point about the three principles, are really around creating this sphere, or this connection between these three principles of having secure silicone or secure MCU, having a secure operating system or something that we can kind of bank on that's running on that device, and then obviously the cloud connectivity to allow that thing to communicate with higher level services and perform things. So having that trio kind of tightly coupled or kind of managed in a way that allows a much tighter security envelope, I think is probably one of the biggest like things that Azure Sphere is trying to bring forward.
That's a very good overview there. And the one thing that I, when I was reading on it, right, they used the word MCU, and back in the day, just after college, I used to do microcontroller programming back with the Motorola microcontrollers. But I believe they've picked that particular kind of device or chip because that does more than just communicate with the cloud, right? An MCU, a microcontroller, actually runs it can run everything that you're controlling, right? For example, if you were in a washing machine or a toaster or whatever the device is, a refrigerator, it is powerful enough and smart enough to do all its other functions, right, that it has to do on that device. But at the same time, it's also connected to this secure service that we have out there using that secure operating system. So I think that's kind of like, for me, that was a big thing that stood out, is this is not just a chip that, you know, connects the device to the internet. It does everything else as well in this secure sphere, so to speak.
Yeah, I think the big thing there is, like, I'm not huge on like standards and things, but like the idea of having this sort of architecture, and where, as you mentioned, or you didn't mention, like basically we're not working with like one particular, it's not like a Microsoft chipset or something that's coming out. Microsoft is working with different chipset or silicon vendors. There's some initial ones that are out there, and there's a whole list of other ones. If you go look at the website, we'll put the link in the link dump. There's a lot of partners working in that space as well. But the idea is to be able to, instead of, like, as you mentioned, your washing machine, instead of like retro plugging a Wi-Fi module into it and saying, okay, now we're connected, there's a bit more thought that's into it, right? So if you have one of these devices that has this notion, if you start reading through some of this stuff, there's basically like firewalls in between even the cores inside of this microprocessor, this architecture that runs there. And so having these kind of gates between these things so that you can bank on it and say this is a secure infrastructure, as opposed to something that was a kind of retrofit in, I think is probably the key there, right?
Yep, that's exactly right. And it's interesting that, if you start from that view that application developers are building something to run on a device, the next question is, what sort of operating system are they going to be using on that device? So what exactly is the OS that runs on these devices here?
Yeah, and this is something that Microsoft, I think, has been leading the charge. I believe there was another project called Sopras or something like that, that was from our Microsoft research team. I think that's where this kind of blending of this hardware and software, or this OS that you're talking about, kind of was born from, making something that's super slim that can run on these very simple devices, but still offer this kind of secure protection to allow this architecture, which makes sure that we don't have, you know, massive wide-scale attacks, and we can kind of bank on our device security, and also have, you know, some assurance around how those things are updated, how keys are managed, and all those different pieces. So I think, you know, the idea there was, it's a Linux-based operating system, but there's, you know, to give a shout out to the Windows team, if you read about this, they've kind of leveraged a lot of the knowledge we have around building Windows and how we've, you know, built secure architecture for a bunch of different stuff in Windows, and kind of infused those into this Linux operating system that's running on this device.
Yeah, I mean, as a partner or somebody wanting to develop something using Azure Sphere, I mean, where do you start? Is there a development kit for it? How do you get going with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's multiple. I mean, I'm not expert on this in Azure Sphere, but I think from looking at what offerings we have out there, just from a public side, what appears to be is there's multiple different ways to develop for this. So there would be the fact that you could acquire, you know, these Azure Sphere devices and then be building something on top of that to run. For instance, I think one of the big things that's kind of hot right now with IoT is AI at the edge, right? So if we can do predictive stuff on when you're, I'm just going to make something up here, but when your washing machine's going to die, maybe it's based on how you're using it or when you're running it and all these different things. So a lot of times, yeah, we could be really chatty and sending all this stuff through the secure, kind of architecture up to the cloud, but we could also push some stuff down to that device and have it run some of that IoT or the AI type stuff down there. So I think from that perspective, that's well understood and can be used. We have different ways for people to write code at that level. This kind of a combination of AI and this IoT framework and even the IoT suite that we have, which this plugs into very nicely. And then on the partner side, I think it's more hardware, as you mentioned. So like partner vendors would work with Microsoft in a traditional way that we work with partners where, essentially they would bring their silicone, see what the specs meet and or see how they could meet the specs. And then, essentially partner together and release something.
But Russell, to answer your question, yes, there is. There are vendors that are making a development kit. For example, they cost approximately $85 in the U.S. To get the development kit, which gives you one of these devices together with some of the software required. And essentially, you're using C or C++, I believe, to program these devices since they are fairly low level. So it's full Visual Studio, integration. You get the full developer interface, debugging, etc. By connecting into these devices.
Okay, so that's a bit like kind of when you start building stuff for Raspberry Pis and things like that. Similar sort of experience, I guess.
Correct. Yes, and of course this has that special operating system that Kale was talking about.
Yeah,
and that's embedded in it. And then on the other end, as Kale was alluding to, it connects into the secure service in Azure called the Azure Sphere Security Service or Secure Center or something like that, where that's essentially the Azure side of Azure Sphere, where all the devices can be authenticated. It uses things like IoT Hub and whatnot under the covers, but it essentially gives you a dashboard into all your Azure Sphere devices. You can update the operating system. You can manage the certificates that get deployed to the individual devices. You can make sure that the devices are authenticated correctly and things like that. One of the things that I found very interesting when it comes to security on these devices is how do you prevent the devices from being tampered, right? Because that's really the thing. Like somebody could, these devices are out remotely, a refrigerator is in someone's home. There's nothing preventing that person or somebody from, cracking it open and trying to get inside that device. So they do have this root, like a root security system built into the device. Think of it like a hardware security module. Everyone's familiar with that from the Key Vault and from other certificate stores. And so there is a mini version of that inside this device, which is essentially a black box, a hardware-based certificate store that's on the device, which cannot be opened up. So you can put stuff in, but you can't see what's in there. So
yeah, I think that's a good point. And we, like I said, we should bring a PM in to talk in at length about some of the details here. But I think what you're saying, Sajid, is pretty different in the industry, right? Because most hardware is susceptible to in current day, in the past, basically when manufacturing plants are developing the stuff, they would essentially have HSMs, hardware security modules, that would generate the keys and they would be, put onto these devices. But as you can imagine, that's also an attack point, right? And so having the silicon itself generate the keys privately in silicon is something I think that's unique there, right? And can provide even additional security to say, we can guarantee that this silicon hasn't been tampered with because it generated the keys and there's no way for someone to kind of fake that.
Exactly. And also the fact that it can authenticate itself now using that certificate, right? That's the other thing that we guarantee in Azure Sphere is that that device is an authenticated device. We know for sure that, you know, what that device represents. So that again is based on the certificate, which is stored on that device certificate store.
And there's also a lot of stuff in there around secure boot, which, you know, from a high level is similar to what we have done for years with, you know, the TPM chips and things in laptops, whether it be Microsoft or even other vendors, which essentially is providing at boot time a way to validate specific pieces of the operating system, or in this case, maybe even hardware, to say that, you know, we can guarantee that this is right because these fingerprints all match or these signatures all match.
Yeah. The two things that, you know, people really want in these kind of devices is the ability to be able to update the software quickly and to be able to react to threats as they come up, right? As we know, all software, I'm talking about the operating system software now, has, you know, some sort of threat vulnerability will emerge at some point, and we need to be able to patch that real quick. And that's another service that's provided as part of this whole Azure Sphere is very quickly they can deploy the fix to all the devices, be it the operating system fix, or if an application developer has to throw out a quick fix, they can also update the application software that's running on it real quickly. So that's you know, kind of included in this whole Azure Sphere service.
Yeah, I think it's, as I said, I think we should dive deeper into this, but I think it was just good to kind of give people a high level when they hear the word Azure Sphere, that they would know, you know, kind of the main principles behind why this thing was built, which are basically providing this secure infrastructure, this secure architecture that allows these millions of devices that can exist out in the world connected, to do that in a secure manner, to your point, Sajid, also be able to be kind of updated and managed in a way that it's not super easy to do right now, because a lot of the retrofitting for you know, bringing things into this connected space.
It's interesting because there has been a lot of publicity. I think even recently I was seeing something on the news about somebody being able to hack into somebody else's hot tub remotely because it was connected on the internet and you can control it. You can send it commands and stuff. So you're able to turn somebody's hot tub jets on or off and change the temperature and stuff like that. And there was the ones about the being able to access people's Wi-Fi keys from their front doorbells, the video smart doorbells and things like that, because that wasn't secured correctly. So you can see why this would be a really popular service to have. And just looking at some of the companies that are looking at building solutions around Azure Sphere, I see there's an energy provider in E.ON who are looking at building some stuff out around home energy management. And you can see how it's going to be so prevalent, isn't it? The requirement for this is there already.
Absolutely, yeah. I was just reading some of the promotional videos. I was watching them, I should say, and there's like companies like Sub-Zero and Wolf, you know, which make all the refrigerators and ovens and whatnot. They're already started looking into it because you know they all want to put this smarts into their devices, but they've always been afraid to do that because of the security risks. And now they feel they can kind of do that without compromising on that.
Yeah, you don't want your refrigerator sending spam out or your baby monitor spying on families and stuff, do you? Like, so many stories out there, aren't there? It's amazing.
Yeah, people get creative, unfortunately. So, all right, good topic, Cale. Thanks for bringing it up.
Yeah, thanks, Booth.
We'll put all the some of the, you know, all the resources that we talked about into the show notes, we'll see you guys next week. We'll pick up the cadence now, now that we're back with the new year, and we should be on a weekly cadence again.
Yeah, thanks, Booth.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.